And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 140.
140.
Yeah, every time we hit another numeral up, I get a little excited. I do. I get a little...
It is exciting.
You know, it's
we're getting up there, yeah. You know?
My name is Silas Lindenstein.
My name is Samantha Rund.
We are your host for this podcast, Black and a Half. The longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Yeah. So we're here. We're black. We're actors.
Half.
We're nerders. Yeah, we're black. We're half. We're everything.
Mm-hmm.
We are so black. We are black and a half. Because that's how math works. Yeah. We have a great guest on today. A fellow filmmaker. Jason Ferris. I met him through in the Seattle filmmaking community doing the 48 Hour Film Project. So he's done three. I've done three. I think we did the same years and we've kind of connected here. And he won his film this year in the 48 won Best Ensemble Actors at Best Ensemble Acting was the award they won. So I wanted to get to know him a little bit other than just, you know, being
yeah,
on a panel.
He was like a wealth of knowledge. You would ask a question, and most of the time on the podcast, you ask a question, you know, the guests will speak and then I'll have something to follow up with. But honestly, I was rendered speechless, but in a good way,
yeah.
In a good way. Cause I'm like, there's nothing I could possibly add to this. Like, you
added
know,
the question,
like everything done. Good. Yeah. It's really interesting.
It's a fun interview and I do enjoy these interviews where we don't really know the person, you know, it's fun to have people on we know and find out a little bit more about them than we did. But when it's like, this is a mystery. This is the guy's name that I've seen a bunch and, it's fun to hear him and his point of views on some of the other topics we talked about. Besides his origin story, we talked about the, nurse getting put on leave after a TikTok post, talked about the question was, is releasing Wonder Woman and Soul on streaming as their premiere, is that going to fundamentally change, how movies are put out? And, Jason has a great answer and a great optimistic, opinion on that. And I think love to get your thoughts too on, the listener.
It took me a moment because I was thinking Wonder Woman and Soul was like one movie. I'm like, huh, what's this? I don't remember Wonder Woman having Soul, but you know, but then I was like, oh, right. Okay. The two. Okay.
Yeah,
I got
gotcha.
You.
The first Pixar about a black person who ends up dead.
Spoiler alert.
That's like the first 2 minutes of this is what the whole film is about.
I forgot. I saw the trailer and then I forgot.
Well, yeah. That's what
I love to forget trailers, but I love to have a good memory otherwise.
It's like 3 seconds they're alive and then they're
dead. Oh boy.
That's what the whole
movie is about. Just, I got it. I'm going to hopefully put this in my not remembering it so that by Christmas I can.
It's the bitterness. people are bitter about it, people are salty. Much like Princess and the Frog. They're salty about it. You know people are salty about Princess and the Frog, right?
Why are they salty about Princess and the Frog?
Because the first animated black princess is a frog most of the movie.
Oh. Oh, wait, we talked about this because the thing I was like, why does she have to work so hard? But no, she's lovely. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay.
And so
all right.
They wanted more of a Pixar with the, like, they're like, can it just be a black person? Just the whole film? Why can't,
well,
I was like,
let's remind you to go on over and watch A Christmas Journey. That'll help cheer you up in moments like
jingle
this.
Jingle jangle. Jingle
yes,
jangle.
Yes. Jingle jangle, A Christmas Journey.
What did I have? I made a joke about jingle jangle. I'm going
to
say,
I have an unrelated thing to tell you super quick
to
not make the intro go too long, but I've been waiting to tell you this.
Tell me.
So I got to be on set yesterday. It was a very careful set. I actually got to be the only talent on set
top
for the part that we were filming.
Top secret set. Okay.
And I was playing a CMO, chief marketing, whatever, high powered lady.
I could see that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I play a lot of high-powered women. And you're
tough and fierce.
That's right. And it's like, that's what I would be doing if I hadn't gone into acting. I would be like at the top of something right now. Yeah.
Instead, you're on the bottom.
True story. Right. But anyway, I can't remember his exact role. I think he might have been like a producer on it. Anyway, he was very important. And on the break, two things. One, he quoted one of my stand-up bits to me. I didn't know that he'd seen my stand-up, so that was cool. But the other thing, I couldn't wait to tell you. He goes, yeah, you're very busy because you also do the podcast, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle.
What?
Yes. And I was like, I can't wait to tell Silas this.
People have been hearing it.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're getting tracked down. It made me so happy. You're getting tracked down.
I couldn't wait to tell you. It wasn't just a like I got to be on set day. It was like I also got to tell Silas this.
Someone used our tagline.
Yes. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, he did. I didn't even prompt him with the tagline. Well, he did it.
I guess it is. I guess it's a good tagline then. I guess we're gonna keep it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was super exciting. Quoted. So. Yeah, you guys, thank you for listening and sharing that moment with us.
Did he say probably?
I can't remember if he said probably or if I just said probably under my breath, like I normally do when we're taping.
That's fantastic. I'm so happy now. That's good news.
Yeah, it was so cool.
That's wonderful. Also what's wonderful is our Patreon supporters, our Inner Circle members, Tara Widener, Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel, they're fantastic for supporting this show. And making this green screen possible. Ta-da. You can become a Patreon supporter of the show for just as little as a dollar a month. Go to patreon.com/black-and-a-half and become a supporter. And also, if you love the show, one thing you can really do, especially if you know, like you used our tagline to an actor on here, go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review and a rating, and it will just make us so happy. And other people will discover the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. You can also support the show by getting a service you probably need done anyway, taken care of. Like, let's say you want to buy a house. You could go to the other podcast that I do, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein, and learn all about how to buy a home really anywhere in the nation. That's at yourbuyingahome.com. And I'll found on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to this podcast. You can also listen to our stepsister's podcast.
Oh, yes, a stepsister. A brown-haired stepsister. In this case, that is going to be the Beyond Technique podcast with Samantha Rund. And you can listen to that wherever you podcast or go on YouTube and watch it.
What is Beyond Technique about, really? What is
that? So it is, on the podcast, I bring on other, like a range of people, but it's focused around performing arts, improving our lives. And then for my coaching, it's like another offshoot of the coaching. So the coaching Beyond Technique, if you're looking for a coach for performance, for monologue work, audition work, interview prep, public speaking, improv, you know, the works on that. You can always reach me at beyondtechniquecoaching@gmail.com. Ask me questions too.
Would you be a life coach?
Yes, but I find like the phrase life coach is kind of a hard, like it's such an umbrella.
Okay.
So it's like, I can definitely use performance techniques to help empower people in their lives. For example, you could take vision boarding to the next level. Ooh. And do some improvisations and things with that, help manifest it.
Ooh.
Or if you're feeling like you want to be more confident, we can match you up with a character that's super confident so you can get it into your body and voice. And it's kind of like training wheels in a way. So yeah, there's like all sorts of applications. It's just tailoring it for what somebody needs. Yeah.
Right on. Okay. Yeah. And then, yeah. So go check out that podcast, her podcast, my other one. but right now we're going to have you listen to this podcast. So open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 140, Jason Ferris.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive. Live long. Live long. And prosper. And prosper. And prosper. And prosper. And prosper.
Was Thanksgiving exhausting for you? For you all? Or was it the mellowest one ever?
No, it was super, super duper chill. I kind of liked it, actually. I appreciated it.
Samantha, how was it for you? Was it relaxed?
It was chill. I mean, it was a little bit weird because of just not, like, I barely talked to anyone else outside of, you know, the person I live with. Like, I barely talked to anybody else. I mean, I called my family briefly, but normally there's like just way more talking. I think my holiday spirit was just a little bit low. And I was like, let's just have as much fun as possible under the circumstances. So it was just very low key, low expectations. We didn't make a whole turkey. We just made like a 3-pound turkey breast. And we made other food too, but
I wish I had done that.
We just went straight to pot roast.
That's a good re-eatable thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're gonna have leftovers. You want to have like something you really actually want to eat. You know, for a couple days.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to toss the rest of the turkey now. We got a little. Oh, we got the littlest one we could find.
How big was that?
It's like 12 pounds. But my brother and his girlfriend came up. They had been tested and isolated, and they came up, and now they're back down and tested and isolated. So we did that. And here's the thing. My brother's a vegetarian. Well, he's a pescatarian.
So he didn't eat any?
Right. And I was just going to get a breast, and then I was talking to his girlfriend, and I was like, well, white or dark meat? And she goes, dark. And I'm like, I shouldn't have asked.
Yeah,
I shouldn't even ask about the turkey if she needed any comfort foods. I did. I asked her, you want any comfort foods? I didn't think she would say turkey. I thought it would be like, oh, I really need stuffing.
Like macaroni.
Yeah. That. And she said turkey. And then I was like, well, now I'm a dick if I don't have it. So I ended up doing that. We ended up doing more traditional than we had planned. And I think after this year, I'm like, if we do it again, I'm just doing fried chicken. I'm not. Fried chicken gets re-eaten. And it gets, I mean.
So you don't re-eat your turkey?
Well, I do a sandwich. I'll do a sandwich. I'll do a second Thanksgiving, like a plate. Yeah. Uh-huh. But I'm not into the, I had a rant on Facebook, which I'm apparently the only, you know, very few people about.
Your famous Facebook rant. Oh, yes.
This whole turkey enchiladas and turkey, you know, half of the stuff people, turkey tacos, like you're not supposed to take like chunks of breast meat for like turkey tacos. It should be like round.
That's the turkey taco thing.
Oh. And then enchilada. People put it in all this stuff that, oh, well, you've covered the taste of it with whatever flavor. You're just getting a protein in.
Yeah.
The soup. I mean, I like soup. I guess I've just never been a big turkey soup person.
Uh-huh. Soup's all right.
Like, what? What?
I mean, it's about the sandwiches, about the cranberry, and it's about the leftover gravy. Once you're out of gravy, Thanksgiving's over. I don't care how much turkey's left, right? Like, that's it. I'll keep eating it as long as you can gravy up. And then once that's done, it's done. Okay. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I agree.
I'm all about Thanksgiving leftovers. So
yeah,
I was bummed that we didn't have more because it wound up going so fast.
Wait, do you make all those things? Do you make all the turkey soups and stuff?
No, I mean, maybe in a year or two, I will start doing it. But no, normally it's just like, I will just re-eat Thanksgiving dinner. I'll re-eat it for like several days in a row. I don't need to get creative with it.
I can deal with that. I could just eat that. I just redo it. I made killer cranberry sauce this year, but my brother just got some Dungeness crab, and I was like, man, I think we all should have just done that.
That sounds so good. I kind of want to do that for Christmas. Sorry, the cat came in here. If you didn't hear him loudly meowing, so I was trying to like, I'm trying to like pick him up. And
it's hard to
like,
tell what the. Just like, I was like, relax, I don't know if that's Jason relax, or Samantha. Kitty. Jason meowing. has a den of.
Come here.
Yeah. That is a lair, right?
Come here, you giant.
Yeah, look pretty much. Evil lair, right? Exactly.
Yeah. Are all lairs evil?
Well, I think, you know, anytime one takes a step back and looks at the world in front of them and decides how one wants to change it, right, somebody's going to call it evil. So,
okay.
Yeah.
It's a little Dr. Horribleness there. What do you have going on? Is that a... Oh, I hope we're not recording Gala there. What is that, a Batman suit or Robin's? What is that? Renaissance?
It's a suit of leather armor, built in the old ways. So we were working on a film and we're crafting all the armor from scratch. So
like currently, is this the current thing? Oh
yeah. Current project. Yep.
Post COVID film or,
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've been working on this particular little IP for a couple of years. So, you know, right. Obviously, we can't be shooting this kind of movie with COVID. So we'll have to wait for that. But, you know, pre-production continues. So.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, we kind of learned how to like make like real leather armor and stuff. And then we found one of the guys. That basically did all the plans. He basically did all the schematics to feed to the costume folks on like Game of Thrones and stuff like that, and made friends with him. And he gave us the book of how to do it. And then we spent like a whole summer working on figuring out like the skills of how to do that. And then eventually now we can actually craft like real armor.
So how long have you been working on this film?
Oh, we started this project 4 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that a usual thing for you? Like a long that long
no,
of a project?
No, I mean most of the stuff we do is pretty short turnaround. Like all of the, you know most, you know, anything that's obviously business driven or client driven or commercial driven is like deadline driven, right? So, you know, and among that we're either developing short films or in this case a feature film, and you know, development just takes time, you
know? Wow. Maybe that I should give myself a little grace, because I'm always, if I'm not coming up with an idea and getting ready to like, well, if we're not making the next month, I'm bad. I am a bad person. Like I need to rush it out.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that way about a lot of things, especially like, you know, and this is one project I'm trying to get off the ground is like, is doing like a sketch comedy show. Like, I think that's a situation where things need to be really like moving quickly and you want to have a really hot writer's room.
Yeah.
And you want to just sort of shoot first and ask questions later, right? This other project, this is more feature film. We've got a developed script. We've got to really kind of treat it right, because you know you're only going to get one shot to make it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Will you shoot in Washington?
Yeah, yeah. We're shooting almost entirely in Washington. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Probably a little, you know, we did some test sequences down around Bend, Oregon as well. So there's a whole bunch of lava fields down there. So, which make for some pretty interesting terrain. Like the astronauts train down there. I don't know if you knew that.
No.
There's a bunch of volcanic rock planes. Some of the biggest in the world. Yeah.
I knew about Crater Lake. That's in Oregon, right? Crater Lake?
Yeah, I think that is also, but that's totally different. Yeah.
Right. I
think,
knew about Crater, but I didn't know there was lava.
Yeah, huge lava fields outside of Bend. Wow. Some of the biggest anywhere.
Bend, I guess I have a reason to go there besides a bad comedy show. Mm-hmm. I'm just assuming it would be bad because it's gonna be at a bar in Bend.
Oh, are you like doing a stand up down there or something?
Well,
or?
I see the name in a lot of the, like, hey, I'm doing a show at so-and-so in Bend, Oregon.
Well, you know, it's like a little resort town. So, like, every restaurant had, well, at least pre-COVID, had a little live entertainment. You know, it's like, you know, like people just hang out. It's basically a town where people just hang out all year round. So, you know, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Brewery, a lot of brewery gigs.
If it wasn't for comedy has got me to go to so many cities that I would have just driven through, at most gotten gas at. And then suddenly I'm there for 2 days.
Right.
Like, okay, what do we do here in Medford?
Oh, Medford.
Oh, Medford. Regency Inn.
I like Roadhouse Americana sometimes, you know, like the weird stuff, you know. You get these little towns and you find like some place that like does pies, you know, or some little shop, and you're like, how can this possibly survive out here? Like, all they sell is lampshades and it's in the middle of nowhere, you know. And you know, like, you could tell nobody's been inside because the doorknob's still dusty from, like, you know, whenever, right? Yeah. But it somehow it does, and like, I don't know. Well, I was like, well, a chance to sort of
other towns, their rent is like $100 for the month,
right? Hey,
you know,
exactly.
It's not Seattle,
or you can barter, you know.
Yeah, I'll cut some wood for you. How about I just cut some wood?
Everybody
for
in town loves pie. What?
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I did it. Yeah. Got to do something in Medford once, though. It was a really fun crowd, though.
Was it Regency? Regency Inn?
Oh, I don't remember.
Was Carl? Maybe.
Yeah, the host? Yeah.
Yeah. That's the show.
Yeah. Yeah. They were such a fun crowd. But afterwards, there were a couple of creepy men, as you might assume.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot
of them there. You know, it's funny. That's a place. There's a place, Regency Inn, that's like most comics that are pursuing it have done. They get sent down there because they have a weekly comedy show in Medford, Oregon. And I was going there. I had been there for like, it took me 2 years until I left the hotel. It would be a 2-night thing until I was like, always had to like, oh, I feel like I need to like, I can't go too far. I have work to do for something else. And then I'm like, I should check this town out. And so I started going, and I went and saw a movie finally. Like, oh, I guess it's going to end in plenty of time. I can go watch a movie, go to the Olive Garden. I found out like some road comics get really into antiquing because they're in these weird little towns and you'll find stuff.
What do you mean, you know? Yeah. You get all this weird crap when you go places like that. So,
that's crazy. These little towns. This TikTok woman, I wrote this down earlier. She's from Oregon, little town. Did you guys read the TikTok?
Yeah, I saw the story. I mean, I didn't read it, but I think I got the gist from most of it. Yeah.
So she's on leave. Yes. For the listeners, a woman. Oregon, she's on leave now because she posted on TikTok about that she's a nurse in an ICU and just goes out without a mask. So it's like, oh, without masks, I'm out all the time, restaurants, whatever. And so traveling. She's on leave now because someone reposted it, another nurse, a reaction to it. And like, I am just honestly, even besides the whole ethical part of it, I'm actually more shocked of people still don't understand that when they post something on TikTok, on any social media that might be controversial, that it can bite them. Like, do you think it's a lack of awareness that people have about how small the world is? Or do you think they just don't care? Or I'm just curious, like, are you too conscious about what you post, about there might be ramifications?
Yeah, I mean, certainly conscious. Like, you don't want to, you know, everybody wants to be able to make a joke and get a laugh, but you don't want to necessarily like feed the wolves at the same time, right? Yeah. You know, so you have to be careful and you have to be sensitive to people. You know, I think this, you know, I mean, I think when you're talking about this particular case with, you know, this lady who's like, in the medical community and making light at the same time, I think it just goes to show just sort of how far we've come in a very short amount of time and just sort of building our own fantasies, you know, like we all just sort of live in our own little delusions and run around. Uh-huh. And, you know, to the point where we can be influenced through, you know, outside of the scope of reality, even when you work in that very field, you know, right. And so like, you know, was she savvy enough to understand how small the world's become in a, you know, when information travels in a nanosecond. You know, maybe, maybe not, but I think what's more telling is that somebody could just get sort of that far off base in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
All right. You know, like, and just sort of still feel like it's, that's okay. And not that it's just not, not that it's not okay, but that they ought to try to go get some likes for it, you know, that they ought to try to go out and see if they can score some smileys, right. You know,
yeah.
Score some smileys. Title for the podcast.
Score for some episode. Smileys.
Score some smileys.
And I mean, you know, and that's a tragedy that plays out like a million times a day, every day, right? You know, to this article, this TikTok lady is just like one little grain of sand, and that hourglass of our, like, all of society really transforming.
It's nuts. Transforming. Okay, and then that's a great segue to this other topic. Wonder Woman and Soul, Disney's Soul or Pixar Soul, both are being released on Christmas Day streaming. Wonder Woman will be in the theaters as well, if any theaters are open. Does this change everything? Do you think this is something
that watershed moment?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. COVID will be gone.
Well,
healthcare for everyone.
No, but I mean, so when COVID's gone, do you think if there is a huge, I don't even know if there can be a huge success. It's just subscribers, right? Like, does it change how movies are released after this?
I think so a little bit. And I think it's almost all positive, really. Even though it may seem a little gloomy in the short term. I think when COVID lifts, that people going out is going to come back with a vengeance, right?
Yeah.
We already see this during COVID summer, like driving theaters went through the roof, right? Yeah. All of a sudden, Jaws was the number one movie in the country for a while. It's true, right? Yeah. And Jurassic Park, another weekend, was the number one movie in the country because no new films were being released. These old films are being released in the drive-ins, and drive-ins were selling out, right? So people are going to come back to concerts. They're going to come back to theaters. They're going to come back to all this, probably more than ever, at least in the short term, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, everybody's got their eye on subscriber-based income. And when you've got, you know, what Netflix, let's say, is the sort of the golden model at the moment, right? They've got 160, 170 million subscribers, you know, $10 a head, give or take.
Yeah.
You know, that's billions of dollars a month. Your movies collectively don't have to earn very much as long as they can keep people anchored to your streaming
service,
right?
Yeah.
You know, to your service of some kind. So the notion of, okay, do you release Wonder Woman as some way to attract a bunch of people to it? I don't know. I think that's more just a situation that they definitely wouldn't have done it had not been a pandemic, right? That's just sort of getting this one over through the hump. And they know in the long term, they're just going to have to build that base. But in the end, it's good because your question is, how does it change how films are released? I think you're going to see a lot of smaller things that get greenlighted on a cost plus model that are going to go straight to streaming through exclusive services like Disney Plus or HBO Max or Netflix. And they're all going to be competing with each other.
Yeah.
You know, even Peacock tries to pretend they have their own lineup now, right?
Right.
You know, everybody's going to have their own lineup. The battle lines will get redrawn. It's going to be the battle of the network stars all over again. But in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
And that means a lot of little projects getting greenlighted because all they have to do is pay, you know, maybe if I'm an indie guy, I might take cost plus 10, right? Mm-hmm. I might take cost plus 5 just because I want to get my movie made, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So that's a lot of, I think that's going to be a golden era for production in that way. And I think, you know, and then they're going to continue driving tent poles to theaters, you know, and using, you know, star-driven, vehicle-driven things to fill in the gaps, to keep some butts there so they can keep those venues open for a while. But ultimately, they'll actually grow sort of both ends in the end. Theaters will be down a little, subscribers will be up a lot, mm-hmm. and there'll be a lot more projects that will be getting green-lighted because of it.
That's good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I get concerned about millionaires at all, but there was part of me that was like, poor Gal Gadot.
Gadot.
I was like, what's her back end? How does this change her back end arrangement on this? Like, she's got to be losing a lot of money on this. I got to think that she has a really nice percentage on it. And this, I have no idea how those money things work. And I don't know why, but I just wanted to see you know, the equality part of me is like, I want to see this woman-driven movie explode in the box office so that they all go, yeah, yeah, we can do it again. Yeah, let's keep making these superhero movies with women. I don't know. I just don't want to, I don't like them getting the negative numbers and that being used down the road if nobody will go, well, that was a COVID year. I don't know if they will. Hopefully they will. But I think she'll be fine. I'm sure she'll be fine.
I think this should be fine in this case. I think, you know, yeah, you're right. Like Wonder Woman with the female director and Gal Gadot in the lead, the first time it came out, captured the zeitgeist in a way, the same way Black Panther did very shortly thereafter or before. I forget which came first. And these are both great. You know, these are great talking points to sell those films. People bought into those talking points and loved the idea of going out and supporting it, you know, and I love that idea of seeing, you know, little girls and boys coming up in Halloween as Black Panther and Wonder Woman all, you know, all over again. Right. And so, you know, hooray for all of that. Gal Gadot, she's got too much star power. It's not going to matter, right? They've already greenlit Wonder Woman 3 as well as a whole connected universe, right? So, like, they'll be okay. And I think in a way this is kind of good because it gives them a little bit of a pass if somehow the sophomore effort isn't like blockbuster,
That's true.
And there's a there's always that possibility. Sophomore efforts are tough. They really are, you know? And so this way it can feel episodic as opposed to, oh, nowhere as good as the first one. And somehow the franchise has lost steam.
Right.
You know? So in fact, I think it gives them a little bit of insurance.
That's good. That's a good perspective. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I will see it. I'll definitely see it that weekend, opening weekend. I'll stream it. And if by chance COVID's, you know, everything's open, and there's a very little attendance, I'll run to the theater to support it. I don't think that'll happen, but I almost tried to go to the movies when it was
open. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm already a subscriber, so it's not like they earned my business by doing this. I'm kind of getting the movie for the money I already paid or I'm going to pay. And somehow that fuzzy mouth's fine with me, honestly. Yeah. Like, maybe I shouldn't care so much. Just, I'll give you some money, you guys. You guys make some cool stuff. Make sure it shows up on my screens one way or the other.
Yeah.
And we're probably all good, you know? And I think that's kind of where we're all getting to now. Like, you know, Netflix didn't become successful because they figured out exactly what people wanted to see. They figured out that people just wanted to have a couple good choice of things that are okay to watch, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's where they really got the subscribers. It wasn't they had like the best lineup of the best films.
Yeah.
Like, and for a long time, you know, they just had some movies.
Yeah.
And they just happened to be there when you went scrolling, you know, and they constantly change them, take them on, take them off. And I think that just proves that people aren't maybe the connoisseurs that we, you know, think ourselves as, or as maybe the industry thought of themselves as for a long time. And it's okay just to have this sort of mushy relationship between entertainers and consumers.
I think also, like, it shows how much content is out there now that they could almost always put stuff on that people haven't seen.
Exactly.
Even someone who consumes stuff all the time. It's just the catch up is almost impossible at this point.
Right. I mean, you think about, like, COVID ought to have been a disaster. And in terms of current productions, the people working on them having to take a time off, it was, right?
Yeah.
But, like, we, like, for having nothing made for almost 9 months, like, Hollywood was entirely shut down, right?
Yeah.
Right. We still have tons to catch up on. Like, there's tons of shows I'm still working my way through, right? Like, they could stop for another year and we'd all still have tons of things to catch up on. Shows that we definitely should have finished and never did, you know?
Yeah.
Right? You know, and you think about all those creators that put all the time into those things and you know, we just drink from the fire hose now, you know? So, like it's all right. Just, like, does slow down a little bit. I think it was probably healthy, you know? In a weird way, obviously not for everybody that had to go on unemployment. And, you know, I count myself, you know, in the, you know, as a filmmaker guys, you know, we had hardships from COVID too.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, obviously that part's not good, but in the greater scheme of things, I think, it's given everybody on the creative end a chance to catch up and think about what they really want to make. Mm-hmm. And for the stuff that's really successful, all that stuff will just be fine anyway, you know?
Okay. So have you always made films? Has that been Like since you were a little?
No, not at all. In fact, it's a relatively late in life change for me. So.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. What did you love movies always, or what was your relationship?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah, no, for sure. Basically, yeah, movies were my only friend, right? In a lot of ways growing up. Yeah. they were like my one true friend, right? So, and you know, if you think about, you know, I come from the 20th century, half from the 21st century. And so I still have a sort of foot in that world, too. Like, you know, pre-internet, like, your knowledge of these things was valuable. Like before there was a meme, you quoted things from your head, right? Yeah, right. Right. You recalled the scene that had this sort of that as you sort of told it in the joke or quoted it in that particular moment in your conversation somehow gave that meme-ish effect, right? Uh-huh. But before any of that was in the real world, it all had to come out of your head. So being like deeply versed in all kinds of weird movies and sci-fi and cinema and stuff like that was its own kind of cool language in itself, right? And so I was always, you know, that was always my big out, right? I was always culturally savvy, even if I didn't really know a lot of people or have like a lot of people to hang out with when I was somewhere. At least I had something to talk about because I had this thing. So yeah, I guess to answer your question, yeah, I was always super into movies that way. And plus, I had an opportunity to see, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark in the theater, right? As a kid, right? You know, I saw some of these like pivotal films, like they were pivotal for me in like a very pivotal way, you know, not just like somebody telling me that was the movie to go back to watch, like discovering it for myself, right? Yeah. You know, in real time, you know, getting to see Star Wars in the theater, stuff like that. Obviously changed me. But by the time I turned, got to be a teenager, I was all about rock and roll. And so, you know, I got into some bands and we did some stuff. And then I eventually made my way into the music industry in terms of like the back end of it, in a very safe Joe job, had a kid, needed a nice job kind of situation, but I still got to be like connected to things and like go out and like hang out on tour with people. And things kind of went weird as like the whole economic crisis hit like in 2008, and I started just sort of rethinking where everything was at. And you know, I slept along with some corporate work for a long time. Hopefully none of my old bosses are listening or whatever. When I say slept along, I mean, I did my very, very best in corporate work for a very long time. And then I just, then a guy came in and he was making indie films and he was coming in to interview for a software developer job. Right. And I was tapped to sit on his panel. So I'm sitting there interviewing him and he didn't care about this job at all, right? Everything all he wanted to talk about was the movies he was making and the projects he was working on. And every time we asked him a question about software development, all he'd tell us is about like how terrible the whole industry was and how nobody should ever work in it, you know, right? You know, and just like, and he was right, you know. And I was sitting there and I was like, oh man, it's like you're right. And it sort of just reminded me of all the passions I sort of had for it. And I was like, I'm going to stop doing this and start doing something else. And then that's what I did, you know? So I just made a shift and, just worked on becoming a full-time filmmaker from there. And
does this person know?
I tried to tell him the story once. I think he didn't care. Didn't care for my story either. So he was like, yeah. You know? So
I mean, that's kind of profound, like just the idea that somebody, serendipity that the guy comes in and shits on the job he's trying to get and then makes exactly. Somebody else change their life.
Yeah. Yeah. It just sort of reminded me like, oh yeah, I hate this stuff. You know, that's right. I really hate this. And so, you know, that's tricky, you know, it's tricky like, to move away from a six-figure, you know, adjacent world, right? Yeah. You know, and be like, nope, I'm going to do it all over. But that's what I decided to do, and it's worked out really good. So, yeah, now I get to do that all the time.
And
ish.
And now I don't know if we met because of the 48, probably.
Yeah, I think so.
I think I've met a lot of people because of the 48 and liking paint, being on panels and stuff.
Yeah, that, or it could have been maybe another festival, but definitely the 48. Yeah.
Did how many have you done now? of those? Are you a long time?
I have done three.
Three?
Oh, I've done
so
three.
Same here. Mm-hmm. So for people listening, we're recording this right after the, well, it's like the awards ceremony for the 48 hour for the 2020. Because it happened much later than normal, a lot less light than normal. Jason's film, The Reunion, got Best Ensemble Acting, the award for that. You're one of the few people who did it, maybe if not few, but trailer. Like, you had a trailer out right away. I saw on that. Yeah. It was nice. I was like, I'm still like, I don't know. How do I do it? I don't know how to do a trailer for a 7-minute film.
Like, yeah, how do you trailer a 7-minute movie? It's super hard. Yeah. And then, like, we were trying to do a trailer for a 7-minute movie that didn't give away the plot of our movie, right? You know, because like, if you knew the plot, it wasn't any good anymore. Yeah. And so, you know, that was super hard. Yeah. Then we just made it, you know, we're just really vague.
And we can tell people, Samantha got, she was nominated for best actor in a drama. That was a little weird where I wasn't surprised when we did our film as a dark comedy. I was like, the way it went, I was like, I don't know if this is still dark comedy.
It was 50-50. Like, it definitely got to a poignancy at the end. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But it was certainly funny in the beginning. And so, I mean, I thought the nomination should have been for comedic, even though the dramatic turn was genuine. Like, that was also strong. It could have gone either way.
I do realize I put people, or I put maybe I could have put Samantha in an awkward position of if she's supposed to be in a comedy one and it's completely different style as far as like other comedies, what people see. The 48s are crazy. Every year after I look back, I'm like, wow, we should never do that. And then like, okay, I got to do it again though. Like it's like this, I don't know how we do it. Like, it doesn't even make sense. I don't know how anybody gets a film.
The only thing I like, that's what I like about it is that, there's this sort of force. You just sort of have to keep going this about it when it's happening. And when it's all done, you don't, like, before it starts, you're like, this is never going to work. It's never going to work. It's never going to work.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't even want to do it. I don't even want to get out of bed Friday. You know, I'm like, no, don't tell my cast, but like, I'm sick or something, you know?
Yeah.
And then by the time it's all over, you're like, I can't believe we did it. And then a couple of days later, you're like, I can't believe we did it. And it's kind of good.
Yeah.
You know, if like, there's actually something to that. You know, like, it's always that, I think there's a thrill to that. I like sort of I like that once people are in, they can't like leave either. Like, you know, the nature of indie films sometimes is like, you have a really cool idea and maybe you have a bunch of this really cool volunteer cast and you shoot 1 weekend here and 1 weekend there. And then somebody gets a job and then somebody's like, or, you know, all of a sudden has to watch kids or something like, and then you don't really, you know, your cast kind of, and you know, it's hard to get it done. It's hard to get them finished sometimes, you know. The cool thing about the 48 that I really love about it is everybody's there you have to finish, you know. It's like you drive through, and even though it's short, and there's being short and done in 48 hours obviously compromises it in lots of little ways and sometimes big ways, at least you get it done, and you get, everybody can look back and be like, this the thing, you know. And that's what I really like about it personally.
Do you ever act at all, or are you always behind the camera?
Not in any of them so far. No.
Or in any any filmmaking at all? Or have you been in front of the camera?
I did theater earlier and like before I did film. Okay. So I have some of that experience. But no, not really. I've been all behind the camera since I started took this turn. So
Samantha, from an actor standpoint, like, have you only done the 48 with me, or have you done other ones, other places?
Yeah, no, I've only done the 48 with you. And then I think I did a 48 hour, a 24 hour short play festival when I was in LA. But those are like the quickest.
As an actor, how does it feel Because sometimes I'm like, well, what happens a lot is I get a script on set anyway when I go to do these gigs. I'm like, except usually it's only, you know, 5 lines that I'm doing for this commercial or something. Like, does it all the, I mean, you are a master craftsman of your, right? You're a master of fine arts. Mm-hmm. You trained on how to break down a script and do all that. When you're just handed stuff at midnight and go, okay, yeah, we're shooting in the morning. Do you still do all that work that you should be, or do you have to just go off of instinct?
Oh, thank you for the question.
Yeah, it's,
I think because of how long I've been acting, because of all the classes I've taken and this, that, and all the practice, it's why I can do it so fast. I think that's the thing. It's like, that's how you get the speed and accuracy to happen. And it's not necessarily something I think about, except for like, if I'm working with a student of mine or something, you know, or if I happen to be on set with like a brand new actor and you just see like, oh, right, that's how it used to be before all of these years of this. So I think it's kind of probably similar to like a piano player, you know, like somebody who's been playing forever can see this like huge piece of music and just like do it really quickly and it doesn't take as much time. So, well, I mean, like one thing that was different about this script though, is that we also wrote it.
Yeah.
So I had a little bit more information going in instead of just like completely getting a brand new, but still it all happened the night before by midnight is when we actually had it.
Yeah.
And then factoring the sleep deprivation factor. That's the part I was most nervous about, to be honest. I was just like, okay, I need to make sure I get enough sleep so that my brain is like ready to do everything it needs to, you know, absorb the lines, do the changes and all of that, and not have like sleep in the face. But yeah. But I would say like this was really fast. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time I've gotten this many lines.
Yeah, that was a lot of
in this short of a, in that short of a period of time.
Yeah.
Like I've gotten scripts that then like you get to set and they're like, hey, let's make these changes.
Yeah.
But to get like however many, what was it, like 7 pages?
Yeah, too many.
Yeah, like
pages.
7 pages at too like many. Midnight and be like, memorize it all and be ready 5 hours later. That is its own sort of challenge.
You know, it's funny. Like, I think with writing, I've gotten, I mean, acting, I think I agree with you. I haven't acted as much as you, but as I've aged and done little things here and there, I do feel like it's become very, I do feel like it's become ingrained that I feel like actually the less work I try to futz around with it now, the better my performance, that I'm like, okay, no, I know my goals and intention, just, oh, I'm just going to be normal. Okay. Like I'm a person. And, but for writing, like, I feel like I've written so much comedy now between plays and this, that I know how long everything is, like by instinct. And I'm like, no, it's too long. It's got to stop. What threw me off for this, Jason, I think we've talked about this on the show before, but I was writing a comedy and that was in my head. And even when we made the shift in the last page and the whole, like the last 3 minutes is like one page and the rest, I didn't in my head change how fast the pages would be. Cause I was in my head, it was a comedy. I was like, oh no, that's the right number of pages. I know how to direct this. I know how to act it. That's fine. That's how long it is. And it wasn't until we shot it and looking at the scene, I'm like, oh shit, this is a long scene. I hope it's not. Oh no, we're fine, right? We're going to be fine. And then when they cut it and did the first cut at like 9 minutes, and I'm like, oh no, no, we gotta, we're going to have to cut a lot. Uh-oh. Like I would have cut stuff on set if I had realized.
My first cut was 16 minutes.
Whoa, what?
Yep.
16?
So I had to get from 16 down to 7. And we got to 16 at about 3 p.m, you know, on Sunday. So that's like when our first, like my first cut where the film made sense, you know.
Oh, so we had four hours to
chop it down and polish it. Yeah. I know.
Wow. Did you just I'm always super guilty. Plots?
I always, exactly. I just rip out side plots, you know, entirely. Which I feel bad. You know, obviously there's some people that came and delivered really funny scenes that are barely in the film now. You know, I had this this hilarious scene between the headmistress played by Jake and these two tattletales. And it was so funny. Like I would make another movie just with these three characters. Right. Yeah. But I had to, you know, for the sake of the story, I had to tear the entire thing out, you know? But I'm always guilty of this. We go to these 48s and I come up with this idea in my head and it's ultimately a 15, 16 minute film. And then how do we get it down to where it's supposed to go? You know, 12 minute film, like, I have to start getting better at actually writing shorter stories, you know?
So are you going to release a second version or a longer version of it? Or do you feel done?
I think everyone's pretty happy with the 48 version. So,
okay.
I'm probably going to, you know, kick out a couple cut scenes to the team just so they have some things to look at and so we can sort of laugh out. I guess I shouldn't say that if everyone's listening. I'm going to surprise them with some fun behind the scenes or extras and stuff, but I don't think there's any need to recut that into the film itself. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe. I'll put it to the team to vote, you know.
Because I had said, well, if we win something, then I'm like, well, then it's fine. Because I got to judge by other people that weren't involved in it.
Right.
And since they didn't, I think I'm going to do our first cut. And just have to clean some spots off of that and then
clean some, do a little scrub up on it.
That stuff that originally was going to a couple words here and there. And then I'll just, I don't have other projects to work on, so I can do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I used every frame, you know, like it was 6 minutes, 59 seconds and 23 frames, you know?
Yep.
So, so to crack that back open again, I don't know, maybe. I mean, if the team wants to take it to festivals outside the 48, then I will, you know. Yeah. And then if we do that, we need to actually go shoot some pieces to put it back together. Right. You know, you're going to go get the little missing bits that we skipped because we're running out of time, you know,
right.
Like the sun's going down. You have to scrap an idea, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the cops roll up on your location. You got to cut a line.
Did you have that happen?
We did have one situation, they were actually really nice though. So
did they say move along or what are they?
I was pretty deep into where we were shooting and there was a bunch of people out by the cars kind of keeping watch and everything. And they rolled up in those guys first and they'll come get him and like, Jason, come on. Nobody wants to talk to the cops. They're all grabbing me. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so everyone's pushing me to the front of the line, right. Pushing me to the front of the line, you know, and I get up there and I start talking to them. They're like, you know, of course, you know, what's going on here, sir, but you know. And then it turns out they're just looking for runaways and they didn't really care what we were doing. And they were just like, we had some people run away. We thought they might come here cause we were shooting at the exterior of a school, you know?
That happens in real life. That just sounds like a plot of a movie. We're looking for runaways around here.
Right. And so we helped them. We kept our eyes out for those runaways and they didn't have any problem with us, murdering and burying a bunch of schoolgirls. So
no, run away. We're just burying some schoolgirls.
Just burying some schoolgirls, officer. Don't mind the shovel. Not to give away the film. But we killed them all.
Yeah. It's great. Samantha, I haven't got a chance to talk to you about the 48 the viewing, but I'm watching the first one startlingly actually similar train of thought as our film in some way. And I was like, oh shit. Okay.
But then
ours. And then the next one is like, oh, it's about a person that's actually dead. Oh, and this one, here's a dead person. This is about a zombie. I'm like, holy I was like, this is the regular one, not the horror film. And everyone's like, I turned to my daughter. I'm like, everybody's dead. And we're just cracking up. Like, and finally somebody like had one where they just like had dinner and it was done or something. And I'm like, oh, thank God. Nobody died in this. I was like,
I couldn't help it. It was October. We just ended up making it spookier, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was really Whoa, close to doing a Dracula story.
It feels like it was
story.
So long ago.
No, it was not. Long
it wasn't
ago.
Even. It wasn't even that long ago.
No, 6 weeks ago, maybe.
Oh my goodness! When you said October, it really brought that back to me. It feels like it was like 4 months ago.
I know.
Jason, the first time we have people come on the show, we have 7 questions that we like to ask them. Yeah. The world famous 7 questions.
Those 7.
Yeah. From Black and a Half. Black and a Half's copyright.
Oh, okay.
Copyright 2020. So here first, and just for your first thoughts, there's no wrong answers. Samantha may follow up. We'll see. I don't know. She's better about remembering that stuff. So first one, what are you most nerdy about?
Spaceships and David Bowie.
Do those go together?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No,
well, is there a David Bowie spaceship?
No. I mean, they end up coming together and then diverging again, but they don't have any direct relationship with me, okay. You know, as far as I go. Like, I grew up drawing Apollo 5 rockets, you know, and, you know, pouring over, you know, National Geographic books, so space and stuff like that. You know, Star Wars had a big impact on me as all the bunch of weird 70s sci-fi. So I always loved like the idea of building little models and like fantasy ships. I would try to build them myself out of little pieces of wood as a kid, and all of that. And then musically speaking, you know, that's just a big part of my life, the soundtrack of my life, and how, you know, that evolution of music, you know, meant a lot to me. And yeah, he does have a song, I think, about rocket ships, but that's about the, you know, that's about the end of the connection there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
What's something that you love to eat?
Walnuts. I eat about 4,000 calories worth of walnuts every day.
For real?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Do you run like 10 miles a day?
No, I haven't really gone to the gym at all or anything since the COVID started. Just cause it feels weird. Even when they tried to reopen, it just felt weird, you know, like everything. I thought it was kind of gross before COVID, you know, it's like everything's all sweaty and stuff, you know,
yeah.
And you get there, but it's you know, something you put up with, but, I think most people's understanding of nutrition is a little skewed by, you know, what we all grew up learning. And so I took a minute and tried to unlearn what I ate and relearn what really works for my body. And it turns out that there's a lot of really high calorie foods that I don't gain any weight on at all and give me a lot of energy. Walnuts is one of them, you know.
How much is, not to cut you off, but like when you say 4,000 calories of walnuts, I'm imagining like an enormous bowl of walnuts. I don't really know how many calories.
You know, maybe, you know, like at least one full cereal bowl to the top, I guess, would be about that much, you know, like, you know, a couple cups.
Your brain must be so sharp.
They also say it's really good, like a bunch of omega something somethings. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but I hear the omegas are really good. There's a bunch of them in there. So, yep.
Okay.
You said passionate about eating. Is that what the question was? Right.
That's something you love to eat. Yeah.
Yeah. I love to eat walnuts.
Walnuts. Okay.
And you know what? They look like little brains.
Because you know, like how they say a lot of foods and vegetables and things that are good.
It's kind of true.
It's good for what it looks like.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I never heard that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true though. Tomatoes are really great for your heart.
One like that. Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh. Onions are good for your lungs.
That's right.
They look like a lung?
Not especially,
okay.
But
not
I mean,
that, yeah.
It kind of, it's got layers and it's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that one's
it
more
makes
of
you
a
cry. You breathe it in. Yeah. I don't know. But
but still, I don't know if that's, if this coincidence or what, but there's a number of foods that happen to be strikingly similar to the organs they're beneficial to. Mm-hmm. Isn't that weird? Anyway.
Okay. What's something that you love to drink?
Coffee. I know that's probably the easiest answer of them all, but reality is I drink almost entirely coffee.
But how do you have your coffee?
Mm-hmm. How do I have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think how's the old joke go? You know, would you like a little coffee with your cream? Right. That's basically where I'm at. I like a light brown drink, unsugared. No sugar.
Half and half milk, almond milk.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely half and half. I like a lot of the plant-based milks, like soy and almond, stuff like that. But in the end, real cream's the best.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What kind of music do you love?
I like rock music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like rock music. I like rock music that has I like art rock and kind of space rock. I like things that have sort of progressive slants to them. Things like Roxy music, David Bowie. I like a lot of new wave. I like Duran Duran and The Cure. These are all older acts, I guess. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that really formed my musical basis. And then there's, obviously as we continue into the future, there's all kinds of derivatives of those spaces,
Right.
Try to keep up with the Joneses.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you love to create?
What do I love to create? I love to create, what do I love to create? Okay. So I guess I love to produce albums, right? The process of getting involved with the musical artist and taking that from end to end is probably my favorite thing. So that's not necessarily the same thing as creating, because it's more like shepherding. But there's a lot of creative back and forth that goes into it, and which is a lot like directing, right? I feel like directing is really the same thing ultimately. Is you're trying to guide actors towards delivering on a story. You're trying to guide musicians delivering on their story too. It's just maybe the mediums are a little different. So I guess that's, that's the thing. That's my favorite thing to create. As far as the thing, my favorite thing to work on is probably visual effects. I really love to, as an individual, to just get really deep into solving a problem of how to do an effect, especially how to do an effect on a budget. When, obviously you can do any effect in 2020 if you've got millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars, right? Yeah. How would you have done it if it was, ILM in 1979, and then can I do that in my house now, right? Do I have the same level of technology Hollywood had in the 70s and 80s and 90s, but here at my house, I do. So I can make films as good as those, right? And those are some of the best films, so that's fine.
Okay. That's awesome. What's a game you love to play?
Game I love to play. Are you talking about of all games, right?
Any type, but you like to play it.
Let's see.
Outside of high schools.
What's that now?
I said pranking the cops outside of schools.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I love pranks. that's another podcast. Let's see, not to be super timely about it, but I think the original was chess. That's the way back when. So the way back when is probably chess and Risk, right? And D&D, 80s D&D. I was the kid in Stranger Things. That's basically about my life. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Then last question. Mm-hmm. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered for the music we made. I hope my biography is a discography.
Ooh, that's sweet. I like that.
Yeah,
that's a good one. That's a good.
Very cool.
Never heard that one before. Jason Ferris, thank you so much for coming on. What's your latest? Is the 48 your latest work that people could catch publicly?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've been heads down COVID, just trying to stay open as a shop, you know. So most of the work's been commercial. So, you know, the 48 was a really fun opportunity to get out and make something fun. And otherwise, what's been a bit of a, what's the opposite of the oasis, everything around the oasis, a desert of good times.
Is that available for anyone to watch? Or
yeah, it is. It sure is. Okay. So I think if you go to if you go to my Facebook or the Seattle 48 Facebook, it's posted there, and it's also at the Franco Cinematics YouTube. So maybe there's somewhere to link things after this is all done. I'll put something in there to that. Add a couple of my other favorite projects too, if anybody wants to sort of get a sense of where I'm coming from.
Okay. That'd be terrific. Yeah, we'll put links in the show notes or in the in the blog and a half page. We'll do that. But yeah, wonderful. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, you guys. That's super fun.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, blog and a half.
Live long and prosper and prosper and prosper.